bridal. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 467. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by Nick to the First Power, Nicole Shiro.
Shiro Solo.
Shiro Solo. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We stream this puppy. Yes, we're all dogs. We stream this puppy live on KOOP.org. Don't go away.
Step right up. The show's about to begin. Troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Seasons of love.
It is Wednesday, May 30th, 2018. Folks, this is the last show of our ninth season. So on the show today, to celebrate our tenth season, we're going to have Scriptworks talking about their 20th year anniversary. And then a little later, we'll be talking to a performer from America in Paris, brought to you by Broadway Across America. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, New York, and Austin. Don't go away. Talking about love. Talking about love.
I do love me some Rent.
Yep, we got some Rent. So Rent was one of the shows back in the day when they first opened that I could get free tickets to. So I went to see it ad nauseum back when it first opened.
So did I. I went to a lot of the workshops. I think that's why it's always so, it's still so special to me. Mm-hmm. And then watching it grow and... Yeah.
Well, I play that because it's seasons. This is the end of our ninth season, so we've done 9 years.
Seasons of love?
9 seasons of Offstage and On the Air. Love! They should write more shows about love. They're just so few. Checking in with you, Nicole Shiro. How are you?
I am here. I am melting. What is up with this weather?
Yeah, what the hell? What that HEL double hockey
like,
sticks?
I was on the phone with my family at the shore, and they're all miserable because they're like, it's 56. And I'm like, I'd take 56 right now. But then, you know what? They're at the beach at the shore, and it's the summer. You don't want 56. You've had snow all year.
Yeah.
So I you know, it stinks. And then I have to remember, at least I'm not in Hawaii.
That's true. Well, so. Welcome to Meteorology Today.
Yes.
Around the world. Okay, but let's introduce the folks that are here with us in the studio. We have Lana Dietrich. Hi, Lana.
Hi, Lisa.
I promised Lana before we went on the show that I wouldn't put her on the spot, but you know we're going to.
My God.
And Christy Moore is back. Hi, Christy.
Howdy.
Okay, that was it. I was expecting you to say more. I went away from the microphone.
Hello.
That's better. Well, welcome. So we have lots of stuff to talk about. I don't know where all my... Oh, there it is. Just looking for all my paperwork.
I was like, you're a pile of papers.
I'm trying to decide what I want to talk about first, but I think I'm going to start... I'm going to just start with the one that at the end of last week's show, at the end of Backstage at Offstage, all I heard was Nicole, she's looking at her computer, and she's going, Andy Carl, please don't do this. Andy Carl, please don't do this.
What's he doing?
So
he's making a very, very bad decision in his career, if you ask me. No one is ever going to take this man seriously.
Right, so Andy Carl has signed on to do Pretty Woman to replace...
Oh, yes, I heard that.
Who's he replacing?
Who cares? Why is he doing Pretty Woman
the musical? I think he's
starting
it.
No, he's not, because it already had a run, and he's replacing somebody, which I'll have you... Steve Kazee, or Kazee, or however you pronounce it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Kazee. So Andy Carl, people will know him from A Legally Blonde.
Mm-hmm. Rocky.
Film about a movie, or theater show about from a movie. Rocky, theater show from a movie.
Groundhog Day,
theater show from a movie.
And now what?
Pretty Woman.
Great. And I mean, he was so good. I mean, he's so good in everything. He was so good in Rocky. And I'm like, he finally got the nomination with Groundhog Day. And I was like, man, people are taking him seriously. This is not helping you, Andy Carl. I'm sorry. I do love him.
Yeah, so there you go.
That's really funny that you caught me over there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it made me, well, it almost set me off as much as hair, but not quite.
Well, we're going to talk about that, too. That's on the list. Did anybody see the article about the opening night of Stratford Theater Festival? Getting canceled?
Yes.
The Tempest?
Bomb threat.
Bomb threat.
It got canceled?
Yes.
Just the opening night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I heard a podcast and they said the Stratford Theater Festival was canceled, and then they went and talked about it and they never clarified that it was really just the opening night.
It was
so they had an hour before the show, there was a bomb threat that came into the theater, so they did the right thing and decided not to. And the funny thing was, the actress Martha Henry, she played Prospero, which they said in this article was a gender bending thing, which I don't think they need to do that anymore.
No.
They could just say she's playing Prospero. she came on stage or I don't know how she announced it because it was an hour before, so people probably weren't in the house, but she came in and announced the cancellation as Prospero with her costume on and the big staff that she carries.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I like that.
that there's a bomb in here.
Yeah, there's a bomb. <It's>
I have seen it.
You must, kind of thing to say.
So they're also doing the Comedy of Errors. Oh, this was The Tempest, obviously. Doing the Comedy of Errors and Long Day's Journey into Night.
They had never had to cancel a show ever in their history.
Wow.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing about Martha Henry, who I don't know. Does anybody know who she is? I don't. But she's
Mr. and Mrs. She Henry's. Was, daughter.
That's my joke.
I know.
Which I've already said
it.
I've already said it once today. So she was in the 1962 production of The Tempest at the Stratford Festival playing Miranda.
Oh, that's kind of a nice little turn.
It's a nice thing about Canadians and British people.
It's true.
Longevity.
They do.
Their institutions.
They are.
True.
Let's see. We had a couple of openings that I want to talk about. One is off-Broadway. It's a musical. It's called The Beast in the Jungle, and it is based on the Henry James show. And Tony Yazbek is in it, and it is being done at the Vineyard Theater. It was directed and choreographed by Susan Stroman. And it has the composer of one, John Kander.
I was about to say, it's a solo.
Mm-hmm. Really?
The Kander. I love it. He's still going, because I got really worried when Eb left. Would that happen?
Ben Brantley wasn't terribly happy about this show. He loved the choreography. What they call it, the word he used, a dance performance, a dance play. So there's a lot of choreography in it, which he liked an awful lot. Especially he loved Tony Yazbek and the work that he did. So he calls Tony Yazbek a complete romantic dancing actor or acting dancer, and likens him to Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly, which I think is an incredible compliment.
I would say he can sing
better than either of them.
I can't say anything bad about either of those guys. I love the actors from that era. Thankfully, I don't have to know about their personal lives and what they've, how evil they were. Well, Bing Crosby was not a nice man.
No, I mean, there's and that's still the ones not nice we, people that
that's
we
the
like
ones we
now,
know about, just, right? I'm I know, but if they were popular in today's day and age, they would be Me Too'd.
Oh.
So anyway, I have, after reading this review, I still don't know what it's about.
Who wrote the lyrics with him?
Kander.
Who wrote the music?
Oh, well, that's a
who
very
collaborated
good question.
With him?
I think it's Henry James. I don't see hold on.
Is it a story that Henry James wrote?
Music by John Kander, book by David Thompson. I'm guessing there's no lyrics. I think it's danced.
Oh.
That's my guess. They never really said.
Interesting.
Or they did and I didn't pay attention, which is probably more likely.
Well, obviously not, because you said you read it and you still can't figure out what
it's about. I still don't know exactly
so
what it's about.
I'm like, I don't think it was.
So it's based on a Henry James
story? Yeah, which I believe is called The Beast in the Jungle. And they said that you'll love it, but if you are a fan of Henry James, you might not like it. So he didn't seem to like the book, but he loved the dancing aspect of it. So that's that. I
it
do
has
have
pretty pictures that I've seen. Like they're bright and colorful and dancey.
Like this one.
Oh, look! Like you this have one, everybody. Right there.
Okay.
But I do have so both this review and another one that I'm going to read in a little second. Has some words that again, these were, it was a...
You haven't had the big words
yeah,
in a while.
So here we go. And this is the one that I find very confusing. So the story is, so this is the point where you need a dictionary for some of the words these critics use in their reviews.
Lana's here. She is a dictionary.
All right. So here it is, Lana. Are you ready for this? I'm going to put you on the spot, but you need to tell me what this word means. Though you could call James Beast a sort of love story manque, his protagonist would seem to be celibate. So what is panque? Manque. M-A-N-Q-U-E. It's a French word.
I don't know.
Well, oddly enough, the definition, I couldn't really figure it out, but it in one of the definitions, it's the numbers 1 through 18 on the roulette wheel. I don't know. I could never really find out what it was. So that's one. And usually there's a good answer, a definition, but this time not so much. Here's another one, which I think we've actually had on this show before, and I'm sure it's probably Ben Brantling. Okay. So May is obsessed with a study for Matisse's fable, The Dance, which is brought to Terpsichorean life by an all-female ensemble.
Terpsichorean, having to do with dance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never heard that before.
You hadn't?
Well, I think I had because I...
Terpsichore?
But I beg your pardon. Your
terpsichic. It's a great word.
And the other review I want to talk about was happened in Connecticut, and it was the musical Jagged Little Pill.
Oh, the Alanis
Morissette. This is the review I read was from Variety. And it was directed by Diane Paulus.
Mm-hmm.
And the librettist is Diablo Cody. The music mm-hmm. and lyrics are by one Alanis Morissette, as it were. But this sounds very, very cool, this show. Again, I read it. I still don't know what it's about. But basically, it's about a family that... actually, I'm gonna read this, the laundry list of issues it handles, because it sort of talks about...
Is she angry? Because Alanis likes to be angry.
No, it's not that angry. So here, this sheer synopsis might suggest a laundry list of every conceivable hot and button issue. Bisexuality, check. Gender fluidity, check. Opiate and porn addictions, check and check. Race relations, you're covered. Later, Nick's pal is accused of date raping the troubled Bella, whose peers disbelieve her. Two more check marks for Me Too and Twitter shaming. So it basically deals with a family that has, let's see, an African-American daughter who is adopted by a white family. And then there's some sex experimenting with someone who is exploring gender identity. The actress's name is Lauren Patton and Joe. And then the family has, so there's two stories. There's the story of the kid and what she's doing. And then the family, which has a tiger mom, Mary Jane, who is played by Elizabeth Stanley, and her husband, Steve, played by Sean Alan Krill, who is a overworker, but then does a lot of internet porn. So, I don't know.
So it's not about Alanis Morissette.
No, it's not. It's not.
We hope.
It's
unless
not.
She was an adopted black child.
I was about to say, maybe there's something we don't know.
So again, this critic liked it. I don't know what it's about after reading the review. The critic, by the way, is Bob Verini in Variety. But they say it's not typical of the other jukebox musicals that have been around, and that it's apropos, and it sounds like it's going to be good.
Interesting.
That's all I will say. There are some words here. All right. So here we go. The Smash album, written in collaboration with Glenn Ballard, gendered praise for its suavely blended musical influences and deeply held personal feelings. It also attracted brickbats from critics. Brickbats.
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 Brickbats. Yes.
Yeah.
You know that. You know that word too.
Yeah.
Clearly, they are smarter than me. Do you know the word?
I've heard it, but I mean, so it's not like I would put it.
Criticism.
Right about it in there.
Yeah, well, unkind remarks, heavy but it's criticism. Also like, literally pieces of a brick.
Well, it sounds like they didn't like it.
They had issues. This was about the original album, which many people had some issues with. Okay, the next word.
She laughed her way to the bank, whether critics liked it or not.
So, clad mostly in black, they glide in for the second chorus of an individual's songs, like a troop of monads acting out the singer's pain. Monads is spelled M-A-E-N-A-D-S. Okay, Smarty Pants Christy, you must know that, what that means.
Spell that again?
I think it's...
M-A-E, it's capital M-A-E-N-A-D-S, and I did not get the pronunciation.
M-A-N-A-D-S?
M-A-N-N-A-D-S.
Two end?
No, one end.
Oh.
Anyway, it's Raging Women.
It's what?
Raging Women. Huh. Or Frenzy.
I was going to say, I think it's Greek.
Yep. Well, because he talks about Greek choruses.
Like, yeah.
It's Greek to me.
It's all Greek to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of
what
cool.
Did the Greek say like when you opened up, when you came into his room?
What?
Close the door, I'm dressing.
Oh.
Greek dressing. David Mamet is making a play out of Harvey Weinstein's life.
Yeah.
This makes me kind of angry.
That it's
not only that
a
the
play
writing
or
it,
that it's David Mamet.
Both. Both. Know, but if somebody should be writing this, I don't think it should be David Mamet.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing it.
Well, it'd be worse if it was somebody you liked.
That's true.
Right? I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, of course David Mamet is writing that play.
Yeah. It's like just the bad sword all the way around.
He hasn't had it play in a long, long time. His last one was a huge flop.
Wow. I can tell you he didn't have any talkbacks.
So guess who is he's slating to play Harvey Weinstein, who also hasn't had a hit on Broadway. Hasn't been on Broadway since the 90s, I don't believe.
Who would want to? I don't know. Who?
John Malkovich.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, at least we know it wasn't Andy Carl. He's got his own problems.
That'll be next. Harvey Weinstein, the musical.
All right. Very quickly. Well, we don't do this too quickly. So there's a sum up of the Broadway season. This comes from an article in or on a website called New York Theater. So here was last season. This is kind of a quiz. All right.
Okay.
Are y'all ready? So the number of shows that opened during the 2017-2018 season, was it 46, 21, or 33?
It's got to be 33.
I'm
going to
say 33.
Too.
Okay, I will say before you say 33, last year was 45.
Oh, last year?
Last year was 45.
So then let's go 46, yeah.
Yeah, always stick with your first answer. It was
33.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Seems like more open this year than last year.
No, not to me. I didn't think it was. And people are so wishy-washy about the season this year, about some liked it, some didn't. I'm sort of on the not so thrilled with it. Attendance for all shows was up 3.9% from last year. Anyone want to take a guess how many? I will say it's over 999,999.
For what?
How many visitors, how many butts and seats to Broadway was there in the 2017-2018 season?
Like, let's see.
It's over a million.
Yeah, well over a million.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Anybody?
What was last year?
18 million.
18 million? You want to try?
I have no clue. No.
Okay, my guess is 13,792,614.
How precise of you.
So, revenue $1.7 billion. And this is so much of a result of this increased pricing that Hamilton started, but other theaters have certainly set it up. Hello, Dolly and Bruce Springsteen on Broadway. So the top ticket price, and this is, by the way, the face price of the ticket itself, not counting secondary sellers. Hamilton was $998 type ticket price. Hello, Dolly, $996. And Springsteen on Broadway, $850. And I went through my rant on this last week or the week before. I'm really, really angry at this because I just bought tickets to Hamilton in Chicago. And I spent $250 for a ticket. And so when I went and looked at the Ticketmaster site, I'd always thought that the premium seating was really going to be sort of limited to like those super duper good seats. But no, if you want to sit in the orchestra, you are going to be paying a premium price. And that's...
If you want to sit in the first five rows of the mezzanine, you're going to be paying a premium price.
And I just think that's horrendous. Okay, I think that's the last stat that I really wanted to talk about. The average ticket price for the year was $109. It was $103 the year before. That was for 2017. So far, the Broadway world made an estimate for 2018, and currently it's sitting at $123 as an average price. Which, I mean, we're kind of gotten used to, but I was listening to a podcast today about, and someone saying they like the super discounted seats now are right under $100. And I think that, I'm just not happy with the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's all I agree. I'm saying.
Everything's right. Going up.
I know. It's crazy. Back in my day, it wasn't that much. So they also released the Tony Awards album. So I think it was last year or the year before they decided to release an album of Tony songs. And they released the songs that are going to be on it. And I don't know how I feel about the cover. I'm not all that enthrilled with it or enthralled with it.
Why?
I don't know. I can't just from a I don't know. What about you?
What is it, Lisa?
It's just...
I don't know. It's a bunch of people. It's kind of... It looks like a...
it's the new guy that took over from... It looks like a Hirschfeld. It's... But there's the new... I can't think of the
new... Oh, do they have a new guy?
Yeah, there's a new guy. And he does them every week.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it does have that kind of psychedelic feel to it a little bit. Maybe it's the color palette. But some of the songs on it are highlights from Angels in America... Mama Will Provide for Once on This Island, Monster from Frozen, Children of the Lesser God.
Like, better get that.
Highlights.
Musical highlights from Children of the Lesser God?
Yeah, so both Children of the Lesser God, and I forgot which is which. Children of the Lesser God and Angels in America are nominated for, one is nominated in the choreography category and one is nominated in the music category, our best music, and I don't know which, I forgot which is which. So
I think Angels in America is for music because I saw that production in the theater, and when I read that I was like, what music?
You saw the latest production?
Yeah, when it was in London.
Oh, okay.
They did a National Theater Live thing in cinemas, and I saw it.
Oh, on video.
Yeah.
Cool. I did not know they did that.
Yeah, but I was like, what music was in it?
Well, we will find out. There will be a...
It'll be on the album.
There will be on the album. It'll be on the Tonys. Exactly. So I do also want to mention, this is really just a mention, and you can find this stuff on our website, offstageonair.com. There's a very interesting, and I forgot where I saw it, but it went from a technical theater trade magazine... on lighting, and it shows the lighting designs of all the Tony nominated productions. You can click through and see a slideshow for all the lighting plots and things like that. And it's very interesting to see. The two that I looked at were SpongeBob and The Band's Visit. Polar opposites in terms of...
I was just about to say, different. So different. And I'm so shocked with your dislike of SpongeBob. You checked out SpongeBob.
Well, I can't say I dislike SpongeBob because I haven't seen it.
That's all right.
But I still don't get it. But one day I will. Anyway, so I want to get your final impressions. They announced that NBC will do Hair live. And clearly they will not be doing the nude scene. But the nude scene is extraneous to begin
with.
2 seconds.
Yeah. I mean,
like, and it doesn't do anything for the plot.
I don't know how they're going to sing half the songs in the show. I can't even sing half of them on air here.
Yeah, the
Father, why do these words sound so nasty?
Well, that you could sing because
I can't sing any of the song words before it.
Those words are scientific words about the acts that they are portraying. We can't say them on the radio though.
No, but we can't say them on the radio. And
but there's also the song Color Spader.
Yes.
How are they going to do that one? I don't know. So it'll be interesting.
I just was like, I said, it's one of my favorite musicals. I've done it so many times. I think the piece is so important. I'm not a parent, but I know at 7:30 p.m. I would not want to be having a conversation about LSD and sex and all sorts of things with my child.
Draft dodging, et cetera.
On primetime.
Yeah. It's chock full of hot button issues.
But it's 50 years later, which is, you know, and I understand it's important. It's 50 years later that this musical's out. I get it. I just...
Well, but all those issues are still relevant.
I don't get how we go from... And again, I'm not saying these were great, but like Sound of Music, Peter Pan, Hair.
True that.
Someone was smoking something good.
I am not going to disagree with you there. So we're going to take a little break. So we're going back to our thing about listening to music from the nominated musicals. And the one we haven't done was Once on This Island. So this is Waiting for Life from Once on This Island. Do not go away. We'll be right back. How it must feel to go racing wherever. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick to the First Power.
Nick to the First Power. Shiro.
That is Nicole Shiro speaking. We have been talking to Christy Moore and Lana Dietrich, and we are going to shift our focus directly to said Christy Moore and Lana Dietrich and talk about... Wait, that's the sound effect for the shifting of the focus, just like this is. Okay. And then, of course, so it's the one sound effect we have.
It's a good sound effect.
We can only afford one sound effect, and that's the one we have.
It's a good one.
So we're talking about Scriptworks 20th anniversary. And so, Christy... Tell folks what Scriptworks is, although you have done that on this show before, but let's hear it again.
I have, and I'm happy to. Scriptworks is a playwright development and service organization, and we have about 140 playwright members at this moment in time. About three quarters of them live in Texas, and the rest in other places in the country. And we have a wide variety of programming that addresses every stage of the writing process. We also do some producing. We co-produce Frontera Fest with Hyde Park Theater. We produce our own 10-minute play showcase every year called Out of Ink. And we also partner with a one-minute play festival out of New York. It sounds like we can only do time-based art, but it's not true. And we give enhancement funding to local theaters to produce a premiere by members' work every year. So...
Yeah, you guys have done some incredible work, and since I got here in Austin, I have known and have been tangentially involved with Scriptworks, and the work that you guys do is incredible. Lana, how long have you been associated with Scriptworks?
Well, since its inception, I would say. Mm-hmm. I was in the first 10-minute play festival.
So they've been doing it since year one? Have y'all been doing it since year one?
Well, you're...
more or less.
1999 was the actual first. Mm-hmm. We just finished the 20th. But yeah, 1999 was the very first Out of Ink, and Lana Dietrich was in it.
Yay.
I love that.
Yeah, I had several roles, and they were all very different. I remember that the theme was Biblical Proportions.
Yeah, that was the title.
Yeah.
You so could go all over the place with that. So,
what were the rules? Do you remember
the first year? So there's three rules for
Out of Ink comes from. We have a program in the fall called Weekend Fling, and members have 48 hours to write a 10 minute play using three contributed ingredients. So the very first year, it was use a Bible in a surprising way, have a revelation involving a smell, and contain no adjectives.
Contain no adjectives.
Oh,
that was the killer
for me.
Yeah, that was the killer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a hard one.
Yeah.
But they were all really good plays, I thought. Without adjectives.
Maybe that's the problem with many of the plays today. There's too many adjectives.
Too many adjectives.
I'm going to take a quick tangent. So, you know, we typically ask one of our guests to choose a number between 2 and 54 to do our legal ID section. But I'm trying to electronify this system. Do-do-do. So I was able to randomize it, but I'm not able to choose a number. So in our trusty computer, it's just going to choose one at random.
Oh.
So Here we go. Let's see what it says.
Hey, this is Dana Marie Ingram and Cindy Winters from Motown the Musical.
And you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin.
Where's the singing?
We're going to do that in another take.
And the other take does happen.
It was
really
quite
wonderful.
They do sing on another take. That's pretty funny.
So that was fun. So that was Motown the Musical. So before we get away from the historical perspective of Scriptworks, Scriptworks was not created by you, was it?
I'm one of the co-creators, yes.
I thought there was a gentleman, the original...
David Mark Cohen, who was head of playwriting at UT. Mm-hmm. He and Emily Cicchini, actually one of the alum from that program, felt like there should be a theater in Austin that did only the work of local writers. And they invited about 11 other writers to be part of it and me to be part of it. So we started out as a producing organization.
Right.
And we did two really big shows on our own. Well, actually, the first one, American Arcana, we co-produced with Public Domain.
And did you not direct that first one?
I did direct that first one.
That's pretty cool.
And I was in it.
And Lana was in that one, too.
Were you in it? But
she was.
Hey, Lana, how do you feel as Christy as a director?
I love Christy as a director. I'm glad you asked that, Lisa.
Okay.
You know, I didn't want... to be put on the spot, and that is kind of a put on the spot.
Well, that's
question,
exactly why.
But
I
am
said
happy
that.
To say that I love to be directed by Christy.
Oh, well, that's quite a compliment, especially based in context, because we did say I promised her I wouldn't put her on the spot, and I did that on purpose.
I think you plotted that one.
I did plot that one, but I did know you'd have such a wonderful answer. That's lovely.
Right. You can send in your real answer later.
Stop it right now.
Yeah, and I love working with Lana, excuse me.
So how many do you suppose, playwright members do you have right now?
140.
140. And how many, do you know how many members there have been over the history of Scriptworks?
Over 500.
Whoa. And do any of your members retain their membership and continue to be active in Scriptworks after they've left Austin?
Yes, and we have some who... have never lived in Austin that are members from other places. We have a member in New York who's quite active, and he's never lived here, but actually he's coming to workshop one of his plays here.
Is he David Mamet?
He's not. He is Zach Klein.
Oh, gosh.
And he's a wonderful guy, and he's come and done some of his work in Frontera Fest, and he's, like I said, coming to workshop one of his plays that's actually set in Austin.
Awesome. Well, I will tell our listeners that if you go to the website scriptworks.org, there's a lovely video. It's a 7-minute video, and it sort of celebrates the 20th anniversary by bringing in longtime members and gives you a little thumbnail sketch of the history of Scriptworks, but it's really wonderful. I just loved seeing all the different playwrights and all the people that I know that have been involved with Scriptworks, and people that I didn't know or people that I were surprised that were there. So that you can find out on their home site, homepage, scriptworks.org. So I love that video. Thank you for
putting
it there.
Thank you. Well, Lowell Bartholomew put that together, and
Lowell
he
does.
Is awesome.
And he's also in the video.
He is indeed.
I did not know he was a playwright.
He's a longtime member. He's been a member for... very long time.
Lowell Bartholomew surprises me. I met him when he was video designing something, and that's what I thought he did. And then I saw him as an actor, and so I said, "Oh, well, that's what he does." And then I didn't even know he was a director. Now I go, "Oh, well, that's what he
said." He's a man of many hats.
Yeah, he does. He actually was in. I met him because he was in Out of Ink in 2001.
Yeah, he was great. So, you know, we've been just chit-chatting away, and I want to make sure we don't lose the focus of one of the reasons why we're here. You're having a celebration, are you not?
We are indeed. Our 20th anniversary celebration weekend is coming up this weekend, and we've got three events happening. On Saturday at 2 o'clock at Hyde Park Theater, one of our former artistic directors, John Walsh, I didn't really finish the story about David. After we closed our first show, David was tragically killed in a car wreck.
Yes.
And that's kind of one of the things that made us reexamine what we were doing. And John Walsh and Clay Nichols stepped into artistic leadership at that point in time.
And John is coming back, and he's going to be teaching this workshop for us on the feng shui of rewriting. I am so excited to hear it.
That sounds interesting.
He's an amazing writer. He's an incredible teacher. He's just an all-around swell guy. And he was like, and he even said in the information, if you have just a drawer to reorganize, you should come. So,
wow.
I'm there. I actually have several drawers.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And then Saturday night is our big party at Ground Floor Theater.
Heard of that place?
Yes, it's lovely. We're so happy to be there and fortunate to be there. And we're going to be performing, we're going to be launching our book, which is a compilation of a play a year from 20 years of script of Out of Ink. So it's called Scriptworks 2020, 20 short plays from 20 years of Out of Ink. So we're
and it looks amazing, just the cover and everything.
I have
just
to say,
really
it's
a hearty little book.
Worked my butt off on this thing, and I'm super proud of it. I didn't obviously do the final design and all of that stuff. A wonderful small house publisher in New York, Dutch Kills Press, mm-hmm. did it, and they were amazing to work with, and it's so beautiful. I'm very proud of it. We're going to be performing three of the shows from the book.
And these are 10-minute shows.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Before we continue talking about the shows, you also have a Inward and Artward.
Yeah,
the,
our friends.
The day of the Saturday.
On Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning, Story Bar does this event monthly called Inward and Artward. Which is, they don't actually use the word spirituality, I don't think, in the description, but it's a way to kind of take a more holistic look at art and the role it plays in society and the role it plays in our lives as individuals. And they benefit a different organization every month, and this month we are the beneficiaries.
Oh, awesome.
And it's being led by one of our members who goes to the Presbyterian Seminary, actually, Diana Lynn Small. She also has an MFA from UT in playwriting. She's an amazing person. And she is leading a workshop. A workshop sounds too formal, but it's a session about mystery, right, and art and how we balance mystery in the questions that we have about life.
Awesome. And that's on Sunday,
cool.
Not Saturday?
Yeah, it's on Sunday.
Okay. Sorry, I had
it. Yeah, the workshop is on Saturday afternoon. Inward Artward is on Sunday.
Okay. And so now you are doing you're doing pieces from the 10-minute play, 10 mm-hmm. different 10-minute plays, mm-hmm. And y'all are going to do a little scene, right?
Yeah, we're doing a tiny excerpt from actually a play by John Walsh,
okay,
called Square Pegs. It was in Out of Ink in 2000, so our second year. The show that year was called Speaking in Tongues, and I'll just quickly read the ingredients for
great.
That year.
I was going to ask you to do that.
Yes, and they are, the play must have a flash forward in the plot. The play must have a character who speaks a language other than English, which leads to complications. The play must use one of the four elements in a really small or really big way, no in between. And
no in between.
That's
right. So, on Saturday night, Chris Humphrey is going to be doing the role that I'm reading right now, but she wasn't able to be here, and I'm substituting. It's just a tiny snippet, but it needs a little bit of setup, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
It happens in a place called the Heritage Homes Retirement Village, and there is a square dance going on, and this is kind of in an anteroom to where the dancing's happening. And at the beginning, we hear, so imagine square dancing music, if you would. And we hear a caller at the beginning, and then lights rise. Lana's character is Peg, and she's already sitting there. My character, again, that Chris Humphrey's playing on Saturday, is entering after the caller. So,
okay, great. So this is Chrissy Moore and Lana Dietrich doing what's the title of the piece?
Square Pegs.
And doing a piece from Square Pegs as part of the Scriptworks 20th anniversary celebration on Saturday.
So the caller off stage is, bow to your corner, bow to your own, three hands up and round you go. Break it up with a do-si-do, pick it up and don't go slow. Promenade once around the ring, everybody swing their pretty little thing. Lights come up. Bunions.
You shouldn't wear those shoes. Leather chafes.
Patent leather.
Huh?
My shoes. They're patent leather. You said just leather.
I said you shouldn't wear them.
Oh.
Last year, you wore them and the same thing happened. Spent the rest of the month in your slippers. You should wear sensible shoes, Peggy.
I like the way they look. They match my handbag.
There is nobody here to look good for. And I'm not dancing with these dress forms again. It's impractical to square dance with them. Last year, when we had the ballroom theme, it wasn't so bad. You could just close your eyes, lean on them, and pretend. That was nice. To have something to lean against, to be able to pretend. Oh, but this is impossible. If we have a dance, we should have real partners.
Jack gave them to me. The shoes. Jack gave them to me.
Jack gave you shoes?
Jack gave me everything.
Henry gave me plenty, but he never would have done that. He was generous, but he never gave me shoes.
Just for kicks, he said. It wasn't my birthday or anything.
I mean, how would he know if they fit, if they were comfortable?
Just for kicks.
Man buying a woman shoes. It's not right. No wonder they pinch.
Just for kicks.
You should get rid of those and get a new pair. A pair of shoes that fits who you are now.
Jack gave me these shoes.
I know.
Oh. The punch is splendid.
Yeah, we have an excellent chef here.
Ah, that's awesome. So if you want to hear if you want to hear the rest of that, when is the event?
It is Saturday night, starting at 7.
And where can folks go to get more information about everything that's happening
for
this weekend?
They can go to our website, I almost said HydeParkTheater.org. Yep, scriptworks.org. That is months gone now.
Well, I am thrilled that you are here, and congratulations
on
your
20th. Thank you so much for having us.
By the way, I had written 25th through all this, so I gave you an additional 5 years.
Wow, thanks.
You're welcome. but thank you guys for being on the show, and we look forward to the next time. We always love having you on.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Okay, that was
fun.
Seeing you guys.
It was good seeing you. That was Christy Moore and Lana Dietrich of ScriptWorks 20th Anniversary Celebration. That's a workshop at Hyde Park on June 2nd at 2 p.m. Inward and Outward at Soma Vida on June 3rd at 10 a.m. And the party at Ground Floor Theater June 3rd at 7 p.m.
June 2nd.
June 2nd. Oh my gosh. I had my...
You're out of order.
I tried to look it up, but I couldn't do it. Anyway, for more information, to get the proper timing and everything, you may visit scriptworks.org, and we will be right back.
20 busy years.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Shiro. I am Shiro.
Shiro Sheps.
Shiro Sheps, it's SS.
It's
SS, off stage and on the air.
Yeah, we're not going to go there, but
we're like a boat.
Okay,
a ship.
I didn't go to the boat, but that's good. That's better than where my mind went.
Yeah, it's a ship.
So we had been talking to Lana Dietrich and Christy Moore, and had a wonderful conversation with them. And just to clarify, that celebration is the workshop at Hyde Park on Saturday at 2 p.m., the party at Ground Floor Theaters Saturday at 7 p.m., and Inward and Outward Artward at Soma Vida is Sunday at 10 a.m. We'll just keep the dates out of it. Fair warning, everybody, so you know there is no backstage at Offstage today. We'll return with that next week. Locally, I want to, and I don't remember whether I mentioned this last week or not, but Janenko is presenting Carmen, which looks really amazing. Did you see this?
I did see it. I can't remember if we did bring it up last week.
Yeah,
I think we talked about it.
I didn't print it out, so I didn't have anything. So it's playing through June 2nd. But I love the work that Janenko does. They always take a fresh take on things. So this is not Carmen in the traditional sense of the word. This is sort of used Carmen as a jumping off point, but it's an all Latinx cast performing a devised theatrical piece exploring borders, survival, gender, and love. And it's set in El Paso.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it sounds wonderful.
And where is that happening?
It's at the Doherty Arts Center. And for more information, you may visit genenco.org, genenco.org. And I was hoping Nick Mayo would be here, because I went to, and I don't, I don't think it's still playing, but you can check their website, tiltperformance.org. But I went to see backstage that Tilt Performance Group did, that Nick Mayo directed, and it was just such a wonderful piece. Really, really
fun
wonderful.
With them on here last week.
Yeah, they were great. So I really enjoyed myself seeing it, and I have to say that after seeing it, I'm kind of a better person.
Oh, that's even more special. Yeah, I'm sad Nick didn't hear that today.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he'll listen to the show.
Yes, but he needed to hear it right now, in the moment.
That's true, but for more information about the incredible work that Tilt Performance Group does, and to remind you, this is a theater company that works with differently abled actors, and they're just wonderful. So their their website is tiltperformance.org.
Their email somewhere on the website.
Finally, I just want to remind everybody.
Remind
everybody that Winky is playing at Ground Floor Theater. It opens tonight. And this is Rebecca Havermeyer's first foray into theater, actually legitimate theater. She's very nervous.
She was another reason why last week was fun. Right. It was Tilt and Rebecca.
So more information is at groundfloortheater.org. And this is going to break your heart, but we are going to skip today in theater history.
Today. Well, today in theater history, stuff happened.
Done. I will tell you, this is the Idina Menzel's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday,
yeah.
Idina.
Yeah. And others. A Brigadoon opened, which I know you just love.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
But let's just jump right into this interview with Allison Walsh, who is in American Paris, and we spoke to her last week, right?
Yes, we did.
Let's listen. Here we go. We have on the phone from the wilds of California joining us, Allison Walsh. She plays Lise Desan in Broadway Across America's American in Paris. Welcome to Offstage and On the Air, Lise, Allison. Gosh.
Thanks.
Sorry, I'm really tired. I just have my cup of coffee here with me right now.
Well, I'm sipping on mine right now, so... You're
awesome.
Company.
So you are in American in Paris, which we are so looking forward to seeing. Can you tell folks about the show that don't know anything about it?
Yeah. So it is a musical that is based on the 1951 Gene Kelly iconic movie, if anyone's familiar with that one. But it is a totally new musical. And it takes place in Paris right after the liberation. So it's a little bit different time period than the original 1951 movie. And it's about my character, Lise Desan, is a shop girl, but an aspiring dancer, and she has a bit of a hidden past. And in Paris, an American GI, Jerry Mulligan, decides to stay in the city. And while he's there... pursuing his dream of becoming an artist, he falls in love with Lise. But of course, this is a romantic drama. So there are two other men who also are enamored with Lise, and no one really knows what's going on. So it's really about love and art in Paris, but right after the war. So, you know, they're coming out of the darkness, the tragedy of war, but also finding what is beautiful in life. Amongst all these young people in Paris.
Right. And so one of the things that's wonderful about the show, or at least as I read about it, is the dancing that takes place.
Yes. I mean, it is an incredible dance show. I mean, it's such a new vehicle for dance on Broadway, I think. But I think it also is... it's a nice throwback to the vintage musicals that used to always have these extended ballets in the middle. And I think people just aren't used to seeing them. So it's really nice to see modern choreography. Christopher Wheeldon is the director choreographer, and he is a renowned ballet choreographer. But he utilizes jazz, tap, ballet throughout the entire show into a seamless format. I mean, the entire ensemble is dancing with chairs and lampposts and the panels to actually create all the scenic movements and all of the interludes. So it really is this organic musical, really based in movement. And that's really the basis of storytelling. Of course, there's a really good book and there's amazing music, but dance is sort of the connective tissue of it all.
Right. And you are a ballet, your background is ballet, correct?
Yes. I'm originally from the Joffrey Ballet in Chicago, but I've been doing musical theater now for the past 4 or 5 years. So it's been a transition, but I've been really lucky to have, kind of the best of both worlds, having a classical ballet career and then getting to sing and dance on Broadway.
Well, how did you find the transition? Because the disciplines can be quite different.
Yes. Well, I mean, in ballet, you're not allowed to speak on stage, so that's probably the biggest difference. Yeah, just trying to open your mouth and make a noise. So a lot, what's cool about our show is that there are a lot of veterans of the stage, but then there are also a lot of people who have ballet backgrounds. So, it's humbling to sort of come into this new world, but it's so exciting to learn how to act and to sing and constantly, constantly learn. I mean, I've been doing this show a long time, but
it's like you've been a part of this learning. Since the very beginning, haven't you?
I have. I was in the original workshop in New York. We took it to Paris and we were there for 2 months, and then I did the entire Broadway run. So I've seen the show from its inception, which is probably a really cool experience not a lot of people get to have. I get to finish it out too, because we're finishing the national tour just a few weeks after Austin.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. That is like a whole full life.
It's going to be wonderful and sad at the same time. We talk about the families we build when we do shows, especially on the road. So that's going to be bittersweet, I would assume. Can you tell us a little bit how different was it from workshop to opening night on Broadway?
It's pretty different. I mean, the bones of it were the same, but I got to see them take out certain songs, add new songs, change entire scenes completely. When we premiered it in Paris, it was actually quite long, but the Parisian audiences didn't care at all. They loved it, but they knew when they brought it to Broadway, they'd have to shorten the length of it. So, I saw a lot of different versions and to see different people doing the parts also at different points, and it's so cool to see it evolve, but always have, the creative team at the front. They were always coming back to these original ideas and then just tweaking them and then seeing, especially once we opened in previews in New York, to see what was landing and what needed to be reworked for American audiences, because it was so different from the Parisian audiences.
Right. And that's one of the things that's got to be fascinating, because most of us have had experience in previews and things like that, working for an American audience, and how different it is once you get it in front of the audience to when the show is set. But to add the extra layer of a whole different culture has to be very interesting.
Right. I mean, the Parisian audiences, they appreciated one of our characters, Adam Hochberg, who's the Oscar Levant sort of character in our show. But they didn't really understand the acerbic Jewish humor, to be honest. And then when we got to New York, we're like, oh, they get it. Okay. This is going to go a lot
very
better.
Different. Exactly.
Yeah.
I totally forgot that Oscar Levant was part of this. I did a show in New York with his granddaughter, Lila Levant, called Levant by Levant.
Levant. So Lila actually came to see the show on Broadway towards the end of the run.
Oh, my.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. She was an interesting person. We also share the Joffrey in common. I worked for the Joffrey for a while as well, but when they were in New York.
Oh, wait. Mm-hmm. Wow, in New York. That's amazing. Yep. Yeah,
I lived in Chicago, I housed your pianist, Paul Lewis.
Paul Lewis?
Yes, he lived in my house with me.
It's a small world.
It is.
Oh, wow. He's so talented.
It is. So now, have you been to Austin before?
I have. I've been quite a few times, actually. My husband's actually a rock musician, so I've been several times for South by Southwest, and I have lots of friends who live there, and I'm actually really excited. My friend is due June 4th.
Oh, my.
So I'm hoping to see her.
Oh,
so
that's exciting.
I'm really excited to go into town. Yeah.
Well, great. Well, yeah. We are really looking forward to seeing the show. I believe by the time this interview airs, I will have seen you. So there you go.
No, you'll be going that
okay,
night.
Okay, great.
I'll be going that night. Never mind. I haven't seen the show yet then.
No, we'll see it that night that this airs.
Well, I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here at Offstage and on the Air, and I know you're going to enjoy your time here in Austin.
Thank you. Thanks great. For having me.
Thanks so much. That was Allison Walsh. She plays Lies Desan in Broadway Across America's production of American in Paris at the Bass Concert Hall, playing now through June 2nd. For more information, austin.broadway.com.
Maybe I shall meet him.
That was a great interview. I'm looking forward to seeing the show tonight.
It's a pretty music.
It's a pretty dancing. Music. But we are completely out of time, so we can't chit-chat. More information, austin.broadway.com. Go to see our website, offstageonair.com, and you can get our show.
Yep, we'll get delivered. You can find out what times we're on to listen live. All that
caboodle. All that stuff. So so that's it. So we'll see you next week. Remember, there is no backstage. Austin Modern News is next. We'll see you next week on Offstage and on the Air. And this is the last show, or the last song from SpongeBob SquarePants. No, Once on This Island is called We Dance.
We dance. Through the